Y'all, if you are a queer parent, and I have a feeling you might be, and you're dreaming of the ultimate family getaway, you have to check this out, y'all. Gays with Kids is hosting their fifth annual LGBTQIA+ Family Spring Break from April 2nd through April 6th, 2026. Mark that on your calendars. It is going to be the perfect mix of fun, community, and a beautiful chance to build real connections with other LGBTQIA families, like mine, because we're going to be there. We're going to be there too, and I want to see you there. This is it going to be 3 nights aboard Royal Caribbean International, cruising through the Bahamas, surrounded by other amazing queer families. If this sounds like your kind of trip, because it does for me, you're going to head to the link in the show notes to grab your spot. Oh, and don't forget to mention that you heard about it from the Queer Family Podcast. And come say hi to me when you're there. Okay, I hope to see you there. Let's get on with this show.
Welcome to I'm Feeling Queer Today. This season, we're taking a queer road trip all around the country.
Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Cape Cod.
Provo, Utah.
Columbus, Ohio.
Philadelphia.
To answer the big question, what is it like to be queer where you live?
Utah is known as like the Mormon state,
but we actually have a really big community, and for the most part, it's really loving.
If I want to be a queer Mormon, I can be a queer Mormon.
I always say I love Columbus, I don't like Ohio.
I'm trans, so like I hope they can see Spartanburg. You can be a reasonably happy queer adult.
Provincetown taught me to be more adventurous. I get free drag shows every day. Just have to look out my window.
You know what place is really cool? Philly. I mean, we have a gayborhood for a reason, you guys.
I'm Feeling Queer Today. New episodes drop every Thursday.
This episode is brought to you by our friends at California Cryobank. Use code QUEERFAM25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog and start your family building journey today. It's also brought to you by Be Parent Surrogacy. Mention the Queer Family Podcast when you reach out and receive $2,000 off any service you book. Let's get into it.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
We don't have the luxury of not being intentional and not thinking about like, okay, what is the going to be the consequence or ramifications from all these decisions? Like the amount of things we've had to think about, from choosing a donor of certain ancestry because we are an interracial couple. Cause we think about like, okay, well, like we had to think a lot about color of skin and what was, you know, what is our first child's experience going to be versus our second child? It's obviously different genes that they're working with, you know. We only wanted to at first. So it was like, we were just thinking about that experience for the two of them and going in the world, and then having to think about like, how are their schools going to interpret them? Even down to their names, like, how are we going to make sure that they both feel like they're a part of both of us? So they both feel equally Haitian and Norwegian.
Welcome y'all to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie. I'm your gay host. And this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA folks in all of our beautiful identities. Oh my God, this episode is good, y'all. I can't wait to get you right into the interview because it is a little bit long, because here's why. Every once in a while when I have a guest on the show, or guests, it really does feel like we've known each other for years and we could talk for hours. And that's kind of what we did. We talked a really long time and I couldn't bring myself to cut too much of it. So this is a long episode. So I'm not going to yammer on too long in my intro here. I just want you to know it's great. We talk about identity. We talk about the donor search. We talk about parenting. We cover a lot of bases and we laughed so much. I love these two. You're going to love hearing Yannicka and Leah's story. Oh, they are also content creators. You might follow them on the Instagram or on the social media at The Faustin Fam. So good. Amazing. Love it. Let's do it. Let's roll this tape. Let's go. So good. Helen, Beulah, could you please roll this tape? Thank you so much, ladies. They don't exist. They don't. But I always have to say something to them. It's a superstition at this point. I don't have any assistants. All right, let's roll the tape. Let's go.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Yannicka and Leah.
Hi.
I am really excited to have you. I've been watching you on social media for quite some time, you and your family. And I love your account. I was already telling you this, but I want to put it on the podcast as well. I really do love your account. It's a really feel-good, awesome account about a queer family living life. And I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's really sweet.
Yeah. So thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, we're excited.
We're excited. Yeah.
I'm excited, and I'm excited to get into your elevator pitch right now. Yeah, here we go. On your marks, get set, go.
So we're Yannica and Leah Faustin, otherwise known as the Faustin Fam, on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And we are an interracial couple. We have three kids who are 9, 7, and 2. And we just love sharing our family and representing, you know, what a two-mom interracial family with three kids looks like and just showing our joy and whatnot on the socials.
Our goal is always to just be authentic. And so to show like authentically what our life looks like, whether that's like traveling or what our experiences are raising three kids, that's just the goal.
And it shines. It comes through. Beautifully done, by the way, with your elevator pitch. Very nice. Very nice. We were just talking about Jose Rolon, NYC gay dad, and you were saying how much you love his account. I feel like you are very similar, the two of your accounts. They're really wholesome. Just good content for our families and interracial families as well. And you really just like bear it all and you tell the truth and you tell your audience like what you think about and what you go through as the family that shows up the way you show up. So kudos. Good job. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. It's exciting to be able to share in that way. And I feel like we kind of fell into it. So it's been nice to journey through that and progress.
What do you mean you fell into it? How do you just fall into becoming influencers? Tell me, because I'm trying.
It legit is true. We had no goal of being influencers, really.
It's amazing. Yeah. Wow.
We had a public account and we were sharing, but we had like, you know, like, I don't know, like 600 followers or something.
Yeah, like friends.
Yeah. And then something just kind of went viral and then took off from there.
Amazing. It's because you're authentic and you're you. I love it. So let's talk about your journey. Let's talk about the beginning of your relationship. I know so much, so I'm trying not to like feed it to you because I right before we pressed record, I did a real deep dive. So now I'm like,
oh really? Now I'm like, what did she find?
I'm like, they got married before it was legal. Okay, you guys go. You go. Okay. You go.
Well, I always tell people when I like talk a little bit about us that like you cannot find two more different people that like found a similar experience and then fell in love, because like I'm from upstate New York, like cow country, and Yannica's from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Obviously I'm white, she's Black and Haitian, and we met at a summer camp in upstate New York called the Double H Ranch, which was like a camp for kids with life-threatening illnesses.
I know Double H. Do How you? Funny. Yes, because I work for a dance organization that does a dance program there in the summers.
Oh, wow. Really? So that's crazy.
That's amazing. And Yannica had a more clear trajectory to why she was going. Mine was a little bit more like I needed to go somewhere for the summer and I was lifeguard Leah. But it was a really influential, pivotal moment for us, like career-wise, and then for us to meet. We would have never met in real life. Yeah. It would have never occurred.
Yeah, because your lives were not...
Our lives were just so different. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like 2007. And I don't know how Double H is now, but at that time, like there was like no cell reception.
Right.
Like if you wanted to use the internet, you were to like this.
The Adirondack room.
The Adirondack room. Yeah. And it was like there were computers there.
Yeah.
And it was like very like old school.
So because
think about now.
And because it was so disconnected, it's one of the most, for me, one of the most authentic times in my life where you get to meet somebody just for being them. And also because she wanted to be a genetic counselor and I wanted to be a physical therapist, we wanted to work with kids. Wow. Every week you got to go to the Great Escape and help kids like get on these roller coasters. And they might have like cerebral palsy or other types of conditions and might be challenging.
It was a good setting to like meet your future spouse.
Yeah, you know, like, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause like I got to know her as just like a really
goofy,
sweet, silly. And also there's not the stressors of like your real life.
Yeah.
Where we're upbringing in things that might stress you out.
Yeah.
You're there. You're safe. You're in the middle of the woods. If you feel safe in the middle of the woods, I guess. But, you know, there's a safety net and you don't have a lot of responsibility. So you're in like a caregiver role for your campers. But you get to meet people that are really amazing. Yeah. And we still have a lot of our good friends are still from that camp experience. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's great. Yeah. It's a great camp. It's a great mission.
And
it's beautiful.
And, you know, you met each other in such a compassionate place as well, it seems like, right? 2007. That's when my wife and I met too, actually.
Oh, wow. Fun. That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And then Obama was elected and it was all wonderful.
What a good year.
It was a good, take me back. Take me back.
Can we please go back?
Please.
Rewind.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so you met, hit it off. Everything was great. You got married eventually.
Well, when we met, we were both straight at the time, or, you know.
That was going to be my question. Yeah. Wait a second. Hold up.
It wasn't like we hit it off.
We didn't, like, date.
We didn't know there was something to hit off, so we were just, like, acquaintances.
How'd that happen? You just rolled over in bed? Like, I don't know. How did that come about? You had no idea?
In the summer of 2007, when we met, we didn't actually really hang out much that summer. Mm-hmm. We kind of were in, like, different friend groups. And then towards the end of the summer, we connected. And then in 2008, we both came back. Right. And that's when we really became really close friends in 08, and hung out a lot and stuff like that. And then we kept in touch after the 08 summer and got really close.
Yeah.
And then in 09, we hung out before I went back to camp. So I was going back, but Leah wasn't. And so we hung out before and then, you know, just had too much tequila one night and you realize things. And that's when we started dating in 09. Uh-huh. So about 2 years after we met.
I will say there was a strong, like, disillusionment of, like, this is not a thing. Like, it's a denial phase. We ignored it. This was definitely not in the cards for either of our families or our own.
The way we knew ourselves, at that time.
For sure.
So how did that go? How did it all, like, how did you come to terms? And I mean, like, this is all of our stories, right? Like, we all have that moment where we really have to reckon with ourselves. I mean, most of us, I can't speak for everyone, but how did it go? And with your families and everything?
Yeah. Well, I can say for myself that what became apparent was that I felt like a strong sense of, like, I cannot live without this person in my life. Like, it became like a friendship that was so strong and such a connection that I was like, I can't ever see her or myself separate and living like these two lives. Like, I have a family over here and she has a family. Like, I just want to be intertwined with her forever. And so that love, like, then became romantic love, but it definitely didn't start that way. And so then there was that period of denial where I was like, I don't know if this is possible. Like, I've not given this enough thought from, like, a possibility standpoint. Mm-hmm. But then it just, everything just clicked and felt so great that it was like, okay, like, we're strong enough. We had gone through a lot of stuff together that, like, the family stuff, even though it wasn't their envisionment yet of, like, who we were going to be with, we worked on it together. There's always been, like, a togetherness with us. So I've always felt like we can go through anything because of, like, the strong foundation that we had set early on.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, like, in the beginning we were in denial because for both of our upbringings, it just wasn't a possibility for us. Yeah. So it took a very long time to be like, okay, yeah, we're really going to do this. We're going to embark on this. And then even when we became official, we didn't, like, you know, it was a lot of coming out over and over and over and over again. Because we're both femme presenting too. So it wasn't like people would assume that we were together when we were together. Well, even now, when we're walking around with three kids, people are still like, you two look like best friends.
Yeah, I will say it is helpful to have kids that now say mommy and mama. Because for a long period of time when they were like infants, like nobody ever puts our family together.
That's a whole other story.
Me too, same. And but we like actually look like, we look a lot alike. We're like very similar in looks too. So it's interesting. Okay.
That's funny. Yeah.
So it's constant for us.
Yeah, too. We don't have that problem. So
nobody thinks we're sisters.
No, you could be family though.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
So then we had to go lead our families through the journey of, like, this is really happening. This is real. So, you know, get on board because this is where we're going, kind of thing. So
And they came around.
They did.
Sounds like that's families. Yeah. For the most part.
Yeah.
Yay. I love that kind of story. Woo. Yeah. So when did talk of baby making come into the picture?
Oh, at our wedding, I asked our photographer if she does newborn photo shoot. She was like, y'all just got married.
As I said, planner, not a planner. I was like, Yannica's five-year plan looks like. And I'm so no.
So the photographer was like, are you accidentally pregnant? Like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah. Like, we were in the middle of the ceremony. Like, it wasn't even over. Like, the wedding. She was can we just get ready for the next shoot?
This is how Yannica really stresses me out in life when she wants to talk about these, like, five-year plans while we're still in the middle of one. And I'm like, we haven't finished this one.
Listen, it's good to have one of those. I am not that person. And it's good to have somebody who does the planning. Woof, I need help with the planning.
Me too.
Did you both know that you wanted to be parents, like, from the start? Or, like, sounds like, Janneke, you were like,
I always knew I wanted to be a parent. But Janneke's funny because she always thought she was going to be a parent, but she wasn't sure if she was going to get married, right?
Yeah,
she would always say, like, I don't know if I'm going to, like, have.
Yeah, when I was, like, in high school and stuff, I always was like, I'm going to be a mom. Like, I want to be a mom. I want kids. I know, like, I used to pick out kids' names, all those things. But I never pictured a spouse. Like, I was like, maybe someone else will be there, maybe not. But I know I'm having kids. So, yeah, in hindsight, maybe there was a reason for that. Because at that time, I was only dating men. But
there you go.
But then also, like, we both love kids. We've always loved kids. We've always babysat. We've always nannied. And we met at a kids' camp. So I think, like, kids were always something we both wanted. We never had to have that conversation that some couples have to have. Like, do you want kids? Do you not? Like, that was, like, we do.
But as to folks with uteruses, you do have to have a conversation about how you're going to go about it.
Oh, lots
right?
of conversations.
So, so how did that start and how did that conversation go? Because that's a big one.
It is.
Yeah.
And, you know, while it's nice to have options, it can be overwhelming.
It offers a range of possibilities that, like, you don't even think about. Like, when we went to the first, like, looking through the first sperm bank, like, there was just a million questions about how we were going to go about things. So
many options and also so many choices to make.
So many choices, yeah.
Right? Because even from the get-go, okay, all right, so sperm bank, anonymous, or, you know, like, adoption. Yeah, so much. Anyway, and that I'm preaching to the choir here in this audience, but.
And because we both wanted to birth, we wanted to, like, talk about, like, okay, well, what's the most unifying way to have our children have, like, similar experiences and go through this as, like, a familial unit? Also, like, finding a donor that was, like, multiracial or had, like, components of being Norwegian or Haitian and willing to be known was, like,
There are a lot of qualifiers.
There's a lot of qualifiers,
It's complicated.
Yeah. We knew that we wanted to go with a sperm bank. We did think about, like, choosing, like, a known friend, and we were like, oh, for us, that just didn't feel like something we wanted to do.
Yeah.
We have plenty of friends who have done that, and that's, like, you know, great, ends up being great. But we're like, okay, so, you know, we want to go with the sperm bank. And then it became like, okay, who's going to go first? And we figured Leah would go first because she's older.
Yeah.
So that felt like a good decision. And then we were like, okay, we know we want to choose a willing to be known donor. We had watched, like, MTV had this show, I think it was called, like, Gen X or something. I don't know, with, like, someone who was trying to find their donor. And it just looked, like, we watched the whole thing. We're like, this looks real dramatic. Like, we want our children to just have the willing to be known version.
I feel like I remember that docuseries, but I never watched it because I was, like, feeling triggered by it. So I was like, oh, God, I don't want to hear that
her life
is terrible.
No, it was good.
It wasn't.
She just wanted to find the donor. It was before
I did watch it. Yeah, she was like a teenager.
And she knew that she had, it was an anonymous donor. Yes. And she was really
she
important
knew the bank
for
and she like went on this whole journey. She found a whole bunch of donor siblings along the way. Yeah. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
That part was so beautiful to watch. And it was, we weren't even, that was like years before we even got pregnant, before we even started trying.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good time to watch
it. Yeah, yeah. And it was like, clearly there was a large sense of her identity tied to like maybe wanting to have that interaction. So we thought, well, since we're starting this process, we get to make this decision.
Yeah.
Like, why don't we just go ahead and allow that to be part of their story if they choose for that to be part of their
story.
Yeah,
they want to go meet their donor and they should have that. We would like them to have that option.
Yeah.
They don't offer closed donors anymore. All donors have to. Yeah, they're trying to be more stringent with donor conception rules and laws. But it's the open donor, right? So, but when the child turns 18, they can try to reach out.
Well, that's actually really great to hear because I remember when we hit, like, we had our criteria for the sperm donor, and we hit willing to be known,
and like
it like went from a very large amount to like one.
So when we put all our qualifications in, like, you know, we're both tall, so we wanted someone tall. We wanted to find someone that was Black, that had maybe some mixed ancestry maybe in there, but definitely a Black person. And once you put all those qualifications in, you know, there are less donors of color, period. But then also once we hit like the known option, it dwindled to like we had like five options like across multiple banks.
Yeah.
So, but in some ways it made that made it easier because we had so many little like choices based on wanting a Black donor with some kind of mixed ancestry and, you know, tall and smart. You know, if you're going to pick, you might as well, you know,
I lovingly refer to this search as the search for the superhuman because, because like you just said, Yannicka, yeah. when you can
make these
choices, you might as well take, yeah. you know, take all your wishes and hopes and try to find it. So sometimes we get a little cuckoo. Some people are like, oh, no, I just found him and I clicked yes and I went with it. And some people, like myself, like ruled people out for the craziest things.
Yeah. I mean, I was like reading the essay because, you know, our bank had like they had an essay yeah. and audio interview. Yeah. And it was like you had to pay for things a la carte. And I was like, who's not paying for this? Like, this is like they know I'm going to pay for all this. This is such a scam. Like, I was like, dang. Oh, yeah. So I paid for everything.
Yeah, she did.
Like, I need everything. And I paid for everything for like all our top choices. Because yeah. I was like, I'm a researcher. Like,
I came home from work.
We paid for the extras too. And it was the essay that actually sealed the deal for us for our donor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I think those things matter.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So. I know I would come home from work and Yannicka could be like, and he loves Harry Potter. Yeah. And I was like, what?
Like
I'm not gonna pick a donor because he loves Harry Potter, but that she'd be matters. Like, yes, you know.
Yeah. These interests, this could be, you know, future interests.
It's so children. Funny because I talked to one couple that ruled a donor. He was the one, and then they paid for the audio. His like audio whatever it's like an, yeah, audio, an audio interview
yeah
and they were like, we heard his voice and we were like, oh hell no, nope.
No, that matters. I remember one donor had the goofiest laugh and I was like, oh, if my kid laughs like that, I can't. You
remember? I do remember that. I really liked the celebrity analogies, like they'd be like, oh, he looks like, you know, Cedric the Entertainer.
Yeah, remember that one, like, Cedric the Entertainer? No, I was like, I'm going to pass on yeah. Cedric.
But this one looks like Rick Fox. Okay. Like, and then I would like be Googling the celebrity, like if I didn't know what they look like.
Yeah, she had to Google.
He looked like Zach from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, but some of those celebrity, because then you pay for the photo and I'm like, they played this person. They does not look like Cedric the Entertainer. You know, so you just have to.
Well, and
you
I
have to get the photo. We pay for the adult photos, yeah. The childhood photos.
I disliked the childhood photos because I was like, this tells me nothing. Like, this baby is 2 months photos. Old and bald as right. can be. Like, what does this mean yeah. the person's going to look like? Well, fine, because both of us color. Have like decision-making paralysis and are not very decisive sometimes. Like Yannicka said, it was kind of great that it was limited less in options. Because if you give us 1,000, we might sit there for 5 years. If you give us 5, we
I
can
mean,
get
a decision made. I feel like it took us a year to decide. I mean, we had time because, you know, we were on the younger end. So, but it took us about a year to be like, okay, this is for sure. And now we're going to make the purchase, which, you know, that's thousands of dollars.
It took you a year though. Wow.
I mean, we had a year to decide because we were waiting for like...
We were just shopping around.
Yeah,
we were like
yeah.
Window shopping.
Yes. And when we find donor. The one, we'll move forward.
Yeah, because you wanted them, the kids, to have the same donors. And you know, both of you each wanted to carry at least once.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we had some friends that had like taken like 4 times or more to do IUI.
So we ended up going with 6 vials.
Yeah.
6 vials. And wow, it took me, I had a lot of infertility. So we had to bring the donor out of retirement because they retire the donor after a while.
Yeah.
We had to go back and like ask them to bring him out of retirement. And thankfully he did it for us.
Wow. That's really nice.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when we were like, oh yeah, we picked a good one.
Yeah. That's a good person.
That's
wow.
really great. That's really great.
We had already had a baby through him. Like my wife had our daughter. We're very similar to you. She was older. My wife had our daughter and then it was my turn and it took me almost 3 years. So lots of sperm, so much money in sperm.
Yeah.
But that's awesome though. You ended up having your kid. Mm-hmm. So you ended up being successful with that. That's really awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. How old are your kids?
11 and 7.
Okay. Awesome.
Aww. Yeah. So a little older than yours, a little older. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. All this talk about the donor search has got me thinking about my promo code at California Cryobank. If you think donor conception is the path to parenthood you want to embark on, you might want to go to cryobank.com and enter code QueerFam25 to get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You can literally start searching for your perfect donor now for free. Not only does California Cryobank have a stringent screening process and a diverse donor selection, which this conversation highlights the importance of, LGBTQIA+ folks can also take advantage of benefits like free vial transfer between partners and a personalized letter if needed for second parent adoption. Very important things, both of them. They also offer a vial buyback opportunity and a digital donor keepsake of your donor's information for you and your family to keep and share with your children as the years go by. Plus, they have so many other wonderful offerings. So if this feels like your perfect path, head to cryobank.com and enter QueerFam25 for that free level 2 subscription. You can also use that code towards a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more info about the donor. And if this convo taught us anything today, the more you know about your donor, the better. Go to cryobank.com, QueerFam25, let's make those babies, and then come tell me about them.
Hey, it's Hillary Frank from The Longest Shortest Time, an award-winning podcast about parenthood and reproductive health. We talk about things like sex ed, birth control, pregnancy, bodily autonomy, and of course, kids of all ages. But you don't have to be a parent to listen. If you like surprising, funny, poignant stories about human relationships and, you know, periods, The Longest Shortest Time is for you. Find us in any podcast app or at longestshortesttime.com.
Love is love.
So it took you a year, but you finally did it. You got 6 vials, and lucky you, it seems like that worked. So,
yeah, well,
you know, I'm not jealous at all.
Well, we didn't know what to expect. I also at the time was employed at Duke as a physical therapist. And the reason we wanted to go through this fertility thing was if we needed IVF, there was like a really good incentive to be at Duke. Like instead of it being, you know, I don't know, $13,000,
yeah,
it was 3.
We went with Duke Fertility.
Right.
Oh, wow. That's
good. But we
good.
Didn't end up needing IVF we didn't, anyway.
Right.
So.
We didn't need it, but it was
not
like.
Not jealous.
But yeah, we were fortunate and it just took 2 times. I think on the second time. We had our first,
So it took each of us 2 times, for IUI.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's awesome. So Leah, you went first. You had your son.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. The only boy of the household.
Yeah.
He lets us know regularly.
Mine too. Mine too. Same. Except we just got 2 fish and they're both boys.
Well done. Oh, okay. Well done.
I see. Is he we were like that as like
We told the guy because we want him at a fair, which apparently that's not cool. The people at the pet store was like, oh god, I wish people would stop giving away fish. Yeah, but anyway, whatever. They're cool. They're doing great. We're really taking great care of them.
You're like, our fair fish are fine.
Yeah, but when the guy was bringing the fish down, I was like, that's a boy, right? And the guy
was
like
smart.
I was like, I think, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Totally. Oh, what's wrong with you, crazy lady? I was like, 2 boys, right? Like holding them in the back.
I just will never forget the cake cutting that we did for our third that had like either the pink or the blue. And then we cut through and it was like clearly pink. And there was like this long pause where he was like looking at us.
What does this mean?
What does this mean? Oh. Like he knew what it meant, but like he had really thought it was going to be a boy.
We went for a walk one day and I was like, what do you think? You know, what are you thinking about the baby? And he was like, oh, yeah, my baby brother. Blah, blah. And I was like, oh, well, but we don't know the, you know, gender yet or whatever, or the sex.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, no, it's a boy.
Oh, and
I was like,
certain.
I was like, oh, how do you know? And he was like, because God wouldn't do that to me.
Oh, my God. Like,
oh, wow. Oh. Okay. And then
this
yeah.
is deep.
So
this
he didn't like,
no,
he didn't cry. He did not cry when the cake was cut, but he was definitely like, no, what does this mean?
And he still kept using he, him pronouns throughout the rest of the pregnancy. He was like, yeah, he's gonna. And I was like, wait, we talked about this. And he was like, I know.
But that's our son. Like, our son is very like rigid in thought. So, like, if he commits to an idea, like, this is what it's gonna be. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And I remember even when we brought her home, he was like looking like, is it a girl? And I was like, we have been over this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Are you sure? Yeah. Hey, listen, you can't really be 100%. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Like, but how do they know?
Maybe
I'm
he's
like,
right.
Blood test. But okay.
Our pronouns could always change. Yeah.
You That's never
true.
Know.
That's true.
So
and he'll be like, maybe, yes.
Yeah. It is deep for, you know, when you're a same-sex parent household and there's the one who is, I mean, it's tough for them. And these are conversations that actually come up in our families a lot. And we joke about them. But also, I know you're extremely intentional when you talk with him about his family and how he shows up. And, you know, we're super intentional about how we raise these kids.
Yeah, we have to be.
And so true. I was going to say, like, just the other day, he started a program, like a mentorship program with a local college or school. And like, we were really intentional about like asking, like, do you have like a male mentor? Like, I think it would be really great if he had that. Like, because intentionally, you know, intentionality matters. And like, we know that we provide wonderful things in a loving household. But if you do want like a older male mentor, male like, let's bring him in. Let's figure out like how we can do that.
We did something similar. Well, we learned that there was like a Boy Scout troop close to our apartment. And I would have never done that before, but because we were thinking, okay, he really is asking for some kind of a male, you know, like he's yearning for some kind of whatever. So we went down there thinking, okay, great. He's going to have like a troop leader, like a dad guy. And it was all women, y'all.
At the Boy Scout thing?
That's so funny.
Yes.
Oh, it was wow. All, that is hilarious.
I was like, what is this malarkey? We came here.
We came for.
For a purse of reason.
That is his funny. Not you guys, a lesbian couple. Like, where are the men?
Like, what did the lesbian couple just ask for?
I was like, why is it all moms here? His troop leader was like this older woman who was like a grandma from Queens, like, because we're in New York and my wife is from Queens. So like, it like was literally Anne's mom, my wife's mom, like as this troop leader, like with this very strong Queens accent.
That's hysterical. I love that.
That sounds funny.
It was funny. And then, you know, he ended up not really getting that into it because, you know, so we didn't stick with that.
He was like, I can get this at home.
Yeah, basically. It's like hanging out with his mom.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
That's so funny.
But we try, right? And right. We're always looking for some kind of mentorship for him. We got a Manny at one point, you know, tried that.
Yeah.
But we are super intentional about this stuff. Like, we don't go into this lightly. Just think about all the planning, the year it took you to pick your donor, because you're trying to make sure, you know, that it's like, you know, everybody who has the dumb rhetoric that we shouldn't be parents needs to actually listen to some of our stories and hear
exactly
how intentional we are when it comes to making these families and also upholding these families.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
No, and that's we have to be like, we just can't, we don't have the luxury of not being intentional and not thinking about like, okay, what is going to be the consequence or ramifications from all these decisions? Like the amount of things we've had to think about, from choosing a donor of certain ancestry because we are an interracial couple. Cause we think about like, okay, well, like we had to think a lot about color of skin and what was, you know, what is our first child's experience going to be versus our second child? It was obviously different genes that they're working with, you know, we only wanted to at first. So it was like, we were just thinking about that experience for the two of them and going in the world, and then having to think about like, how are their schools going to interpret them, even down to their names? Like, how are we going to make sure that they both feel like they're a part of both of us? So they both feel equally Haitian and Norwegian, you know?
I love that. Yeah.
It's like so many things we have to think about. Even their donor's Jamaican, you know, with some Portuguese ancestry. So that's how we ended up choosing him. So you have to think about like, you know, even saying like reminding them that they're also Jamaican, because we do make sure to say that for them, because we don't want to deny any parts of them, of themselves for them. And so like, they know their donor conceived. We've had those conversations and we were intentional about that, you know, especially for our son to know that he's Black, because he did come out very fair for us to be like, this is what your donor looks like. Clearly a Black man, you know, so he can have that understanding. And just like with, we did second parent adoption, you know, we make sure in our car, we constantly have our marriage certificate, copies of their adoption certificates, copies of their birth certificates, because we live in the South and you just never know.
You're interracial and you got two notches in the South. You got two notches everywhere. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then picking the location that we live in the South, right? So like, do we have a city or community that's very supportive of our family? And there's, you know, our kids actually, it's really funny. I think that they're not quite sure. They don't know that we're like in the minority or the oddity quite yet, because they're like developmentally still don't understand that, like, maybe heterosexual, you know, they just say like, I have two moms. That, like, it's totally normal.
They know that not everybody has two moms, but I don't think they don't feel like we specifically chose. So we live in the North Carolina, but we live in Durham County, which is like, very, like, there are a lot of lesbians here. There are a lot of LGBT. There's a long, strong, like a...
It's really progressive. Yeah, little
LGBTQ
circle.
LGBTQ community, as well as like a lot of Black activism too. Mm-hmm. So they're surrounded by, and we try to make sure, you know, diversity in like all aspects of the word. Whereas before in North Carolina, we lived in this place that was a little more rural. And like, if you drove by, you'd see a lot of support for the other candidate kind of thing. And we're like, yeah, we can't stay here. So
no.
And no. You don't want to raise a family here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't want your kids to feel othered. They're going to feel othered. Mm-hmm. Right. But you don't want them. You want to give them the best odds at as little othering as possible, mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah,
exactly.
Right?
For sure.
I think about this. Like I've been interviewed a good number of times on like straight mom podcasts, you know, and they're always asking my queer mom perspective and what can we do to be more inclusive of your families and what can we do? How do we talk to our kids about gay families? And I say all the time, like, just talk to your kids about them. Like, just keep it in. Yeah. We don't have the privilege of not talking to our kids. Right. And it's the same thing with like, with being Black. You like when white people say, I don't see color. I don't have to talk to my kids about race. No, but you don't have the privilege of not talking to your kids about the color of their skin. Right?
Exactly.
So then that means it's my responsibility to talk to my kids about the color of their skin and the color of everybody's skin in the world.
Yeah.
So that it's all, that conversation is normalized. And so, yes, no, we see color and also all humans are valid and worth everything, right? Yeah. And it's the same thing that goes for queer families. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people think, oh, yeah, my kids see two mom families all over the place. I don't have to talk about it. Yes, you do.
Mm-hmm. You do.
Yeah. Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. You have to because it normalizes it for them.
It does, yeah.
And then your kid is going to go to my kid on the playground and be like, how do you have two moms? How does that work?
Exactly.
Yeah. Right? Which is what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's not possible. Yeah.
Well, even like at a very young age, like, Four years old or 5 years old, sometimes the kids would come back with a story of like, they said that's gross. Is it gross? Like, is it gross to have two moms? And the problem is if the parents in that household aren't having those conversations, then the kids are creating their own cognitive experience around it. And and they'll create their own narrative. And so that's why it's so important to have the books, have the conversations, talk about acceptance and uniqueness and all of it.
And pay attention to what they're being exposed to in the media too.
Exactly.
Sometimes those parents are people who are like, oh my gosh, I don't know where they got that from, you know, but you never know what they could be watching and what they're, you know, or, you know, if they got it from your grandparents, like, you don't know. So,
yeah, it's so true. That's what I always tell all my, like, all the non-queer counterparts. That's what I call the
non-queer counterparts. That's hilarious. I love it.
Like, those books aren't just for us. Heather has two moms. Yeah. That's not just for
us.
That's
can for read
you
the book.
Too.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's so funny. Yes.
Right? It's everybody should get those books because also you should support all the queers because we're better.
We're clearly superior. Yeah.
We are evolved. We're the evolved species. So you have three children. Yannicka, you gave birth to your second, your daughter, and then you gave birth again.
Yes.
So I'm taking it you loved pregnancy.
I did.
Yannicka's the best pregnant person.
I did love pregnancy. God.
I am very upset. You can like, envy and jealousy is like oozing across this way because my pregnancy and my labor and everything around being pregnant was not so great. Bad. So there was no drawing of straws for the third.
Yeah.
I'll say that. I was like,
no,
Leah I'm done. Was absolutely, Leah's pregnancy was really awful. Labor and delivery was crazy.
Like literally my placenta wouldn't come out. Like
there were so many
My body like closed up shop and it was like.
Her body did not want to be pregnant.
My body did not want to be pregnant. I had hyperemesis gravidum, so I threw up the entire time, multiple times a day. And then once that placenta thing happened and like it didn't just easily come out and they had to manually extract that, I was like, this is a really good sign that like I'm not supposed to be a birthing person ever again.
And thank God I have another uterus over here.
Yeah, thank goodness, because going through that again would have been...
There was a crazy time where Yannicka wanted four, and so when we were talking about the third, she was like, are you sure you don't want to? And I wouldn't even let her finish the sentence.
A death stare.
I was like, I literally think I have PTSD from that pregnancy year.
I can't believe you just asked me that.
I was like, I am very,
very
upset.
I was just checking. I just wanted to check... I was just gazing because like I know that I don't want to go through that again, but I just want to make sure I don't take this opportunity.
And then
away
she had
me.
The audacity to be like, and you just had an appendectomy. What if it was your appendix the whole time that made you sick? And I was like,
I was just
no.
trying to gauge.
I was like, it is not the appendix that made me vomit for a full year, Yannicka.
No. I just wanted to check before I go through the process again. So
oh my gosh.
She has recently let go of the idea of four. I'm gonna say
I have mostly let go of the idea of four.
That was going to be my next question.
98%.
90. 8%.
98.5.
But I'm like 200%. So if you average the two, we're not having a four. Yeah. Three is plenty.
She's more like 600%.
600%. You just 600%. Average our two and we're good at three.
Three kids is a lot. I don't like odd numbers and that, but that's not enough of a reason to have a whole other child. And that's what I'm trying to reason myself.
Yannica also loves babies. So Yannica is like a little baby whisperer. Like when you see Yannica just like gets all gushy.
I visited a friend the other day who had a newborn, and that's when I went down to 98.5.
I lost her.
Yeah. I was at 100. And then I visited that my friend, and it was the perfect newborn, like the kind that has like not a single blemish. Just angelic. He had just breastfed. He was all milk drunk. And I was like 98.5 because I could do this part again.
Yeah. But
the thing is, then they grow up.
Yeah. Then you see her with our 2-year-old at home and she's like, why is she running around like this?
Then that brings me back up to 105% because I'm like, I'm tired.
Yeah.
I'm 40 now. I don't have that energy to get down there and do all that all day long. Yeah. And also our third is like wild. So she just like walks around the house with her hands out, like just tipping everything down onto the ground. Like I'll take her to the library.
Like a cat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. At the public library, I swear to God, everybody feels like, oh no, here she comes, because she just walks down the aisles with her hands out and just dumps it all on the ground.
She loves throwing things that aren't supposed to be thrown.
Yeah.
I've given up.
I've taken a hiatus from going to the public library because I'm like, I can't show my face there. You're killing me. Like, I'm like, let me put this one back up. And she's already got like 30 down again. Let me put this one back up.
She's
got
30. She's a tornado. Yeah. So she's a force.
Parenting. That is parenting in a nutshell. You know what you're not too tired for? Here it is. You know what you're not too tired for? A boy fish.
Leah took the kids to the fall festival last year and came back home with do you know what an axolotl is?
Yes.
Axolotl. Yeah. Came home with something that looked like it should have died when the dinosaurs did.
I'm definitely the pushover sucker parent. Yeah.
And I was like, what is this amphibious creature that's like, prehistoric? So what are we? Is this for us? This house? Please get this out of my house. We had that thing for, 2 months?
It stunk so bad.
No matter how many times Leah cleaned that, I was like, please clean this again. It smelled horrible. I couldn't do it.
I don't know. Like, I don't know how to take care of a tank. So let it be known. Like, if I feel bad, we're blaming Sonic the Axolotl. Oh, yeah, it might not have been his fault. Sonic.
I was like, don't name this thing. He's going.
Idris. So they named our Axolotl. And then I was like, I don't know how to care for it. And I was getting the filters and I was doing the YouTube.
Leah didn't even know how to care for a tank.
I don't know how to do an aquarium.
She never had anything like that. But she thought it was a good idea to go to the fair and bring this thing home. That thing grew so much because the kids were obsessed with feeding it because you can't touch it. So all you can do to interact with it is feed it.
Yeah, you can't touch it. It'll kill it.
So they just fed it all and they wouldn't tell each other when they fed it. It got so big. And I would have, like, I would lay in my bed like, what if it can walk? Like, what if it does get out of there? Like, I'm from Brooklyn. Like, I was like, that thing looked like something that mutated in Prospect Park.
Yannica's generalized anxiety was not having that axolotl.
My anxiety was like, so every morning I would check to make sure it was still in this tank. Because I was just waiting for the day when it was going to like creep up in my bed.
Let it be known that the PTA mom did not tell me that it was a stinky animal. So the PTA mom sold it to us for
$5. We knew how to take care of a tank and we had some corn sort of system.
She gave me a printout with a QR code of how to care for an axolotl. She gave me the little container and she thought I would be fine. I was not fine. I do not know how to care for an axolotl.
Did you pay for it? Did you pay
it? Like $5. Oh, it was like $5. And it was like wonderful. And I knew I messed up as soon as I walked in because I was holding the thing. What is in there?
You knew I would not want that thing in my
house. The kids were so excited and it was a cool thing. Excited. I have never heard of an axolotl. It was really cute. So then
I had to spend time do a campaign against him.
Then it became clear.
Do you smell that smell? Where's that coming from? Is that from Sonic? We don't want him in the house, right? Like, we gotta get rid of that smell.
It was really bad. It was so stinky that I was pretty sure I was gonna lose my marriage if I didn't bring home the axolotl.
I did put out some threats.
She did. She threatened.
I didn't even know they were legal. Like, I didn't know you could have them as pets.
Where did you get this from?
She sold like 20 that day.
I was like, yeah. Where'd she get all these axolotls? She's like an underground axolotl breeding ring.
Yeah, they're breeding them in their house. Yeah.
I was like,
So anyways, the local pet store took him for free and all of the things that I had. I was like, I called and I was like, I don't.
You drove 45 minutes to another county. Nobody wanted that.
I had to go to a rare place. Like the Petco doesn't take an axolotl. I had to like look up rare places on my phone. And I was like, listen.
All the pet places around here were like, oh, what?
I said, I'll have an axolotl. I'll give you the tank. I'll give you the filter. Just get them out of my house. And then our poor son came with me and cried the entire time.
He was fine.
No, he was crying. And he was like, Sonic. Aww. And I was like,
And then after a couple of days, I was like, you see how nice it smells in here?
And then he was happy. Yeah. He was like, oh, it doesn't stink anymore.
I think I got him like some Pokemon cards. And he was like, okay, I'm cool.
He's fine. Yeah. He's fine.
Right, I got him a Sonic shirt. He had a shirt with a little Sonic the Hedgehog. I was like, there's your Sonic right there. You're good.
He's with you always.
That, in your heart. That actually does work for him. He's kind of sentimental, so
it was a horrible experience.
I don't know how we got on the axolotl story, but
I don't know, but I'm so happy we did because was amazing.
The boy fish.
I can't care for fish. I'm out.
Okay, so no fish for you. Okay. No,
we do have a male cat.
We also would like to rehome.
We also don't want
him. We'd like to rehome him too. But he's so old.
We had him before we had the kids.
Yeah.
He is old. And we didn't realize he would still be here when we had three kids. And so now that he is, almost 16 years old.
He's outlived the average lifespan.
We are like, dang, he's still here. But now we had three kids. Yeah. We got to care for them and still him. It's a lot.
Yeah, our two-year-old likes to like run over to his little like cat food and stuff and put her hands in there.
The
little litter box looks like a fun it pellet looks like sensory station. It's like not a sensory station, like leave it alone, God. You know?
Yeah.
So he's indoor outdoor though.
Oh my God. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast.
All right, folks. Now I know we've talked a lot about sperm banks in this episode. But there are so many other beautiful ways to make a baby in the queer community, and I don't want to leave my folks without a uterus hanging. So let's talk about B-parent surrogacy, because everyone, and I mean everyone, deserves to know all of the ways our families are made. B-parent surrogacy helps folks create families through trusted ethical surrogacy and IVF programs. They believe everyone deserves a family, which I love. And their entire process is built around inclusivity and compassion. Yay. B-Parent takes pride in transparent communication and legal clarity, ensuring a smooth path to parenthood, which is very important, especially on these lengthy journeys. It is not just a service, it's a community built on trust, empathy, and the belief that love makes a family. Love that. Every surrogate and donor goes through a triple screening process for health, safety, and compatibility. And their clinics follow top international medical standards with full health coverage for both surrogate and baby. It is designed for international parents, which many surrogacy journeys turn out to be because of legal ramifications and countries. So they have multilingual coordinators, full legal assistance, and help with embassy exit if needed. So if you're curious about international surrogacy or IVF, go check out beparentsurrogacy.com and schedule a free consultation. Oh, and if you mention this podcast when you meet with them, they will give you $2,000 off any treatment you choose. So there's no waiting time to start your journey. Just go to beparentsurrogacy.com, mention us, and let's go. Let's make the babies.
Love is love.
It sounds like y'all's, your hands are full.
Yes.
They are. Our three kids are very spirited.
Yeah, I get it. But you're doing a wonderful job and you found a good home for the axolotl, and that's really all that matters there.
He's thriving.
So. I don't care. Yeah. He's gone. Yeah, either way. I'm sure he's fine.
He's doing something.
Oh my God. He's fine. He's in a loving home now.
Yeah. Somebody knows how to take care of his filter. That's all he needs.
Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure that's what it is.
Yeah.
And I love that story, and I'm so glad you shared it. And I'm so glad you came on the show to share your beautiful family and your relationship. You guys are funny.
Thank you.
It's really the only way to get through, you know.
Yeah, it really
many
is.
Kids, you just gotta laugh.
You gotta laugh through it. And what are their ages again?
7 and 9. Yeah.
2, 7, and 9. Yeah. So I have a 7-year-old, and I've realized I'm going to wrap it up because I know you have places to be and all the things. But I've realized I don't think I like the age of seven.
It's not your favorite.
And seven is your daughter, right? Our 7-year-old.
It's my son.
Oh, okay.
My daughter's 11.
Okay.
Seven's been interesting. There's a lot of like autonomy, independence, and feelings, but not a lot of like skills, like emotional regulation skills or coping skills. So it's just like charged with like a want for independence, but not like a skill set that like really can bolster that up sometimes.
Yeah. And my 7-year-old happens to be a know-it-all.
Oh, ours. We have ours one as of those. Well. Yeah, she knows everything.
Oh, everything. Yeah, I can't. And I'm like, we were doing, but he was having me like quiz him on multiplication walking down the street. He's like, Mom, give me this. He's like, I know what this is. La, la, I know what 9 times 5 is. And he gave me the wrong number. And I was like, no, you're wrong. It's actually, ooh. Mom, I did it right. I know it. Like, he argued with me for 2 blocks.
You know,
until finally.
Oh, man.
Both of our I was do like, that.
Yeah,
like, you're not right.
I know, because I think to myself, like, is it like some parents, would they lie to their kid? Would they be like, oh yeah, it is 20, 9 times 5, just to not, because I will not. And I'm so impressed by the way they believe in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Is the way they will argue with us. And Leah has her doctorate. I have my doctorate. And they will argue with us about being wrong about a math problem. Like, it'll be like 2 times 5. And they're like, no, it is not 10.
You know. Put it into your phone, your phone like, calculator, and they'll still try to find a way to say that it's inaccurate.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so, but I'm impressed. Like multiple degrees over here, but you're going to argue with us about this. Okay.
It drives me crazy. It really drives me crazy. He's driving me crazy. I love him to death, and he is driving me insane right now. This age is killing me.
I was going to say 7. 7 is interesting, too. Maybe your son doesn't do this because 7 and 11 is a further gap. But her daughter likes to basically tell her brother all day, every day that he's wrong. Like, she wants to not just be correct in her own. Like, she wants to be like, oh, you didn't do this right. Oh, you didn't do this right. You didn't do this right. And we're, like, having to be like, like, let him be. Like, let him just live his life over there.
My son does that to his sister, but only, like, when she's getting in trouble, like when we're like reprimanding her, he'll be like, and she did this, like,
just to slide that in there.
And you forgot about this.
Yeah. He'll be sitting there and he'll just be like, yeah. And don't forget about that time she did the thing.
Like, Ryan,
it is just not
in
helping.
Case you needed like help. And sometimes you're probably like, oh yeah. Yeah. That thing.
Yes, actually. And yes, sometimes it's like, yeah, what he said. And sometimes it's like, you are not helping.
Yeah, you are not helping parent. Right now. Yeah.
You are not the parent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. It's hard.
Parenting is crazy.
Struggle is real.
You know, the two of them have such a different experience with their navigation in life, too, being, you know, one's 9, one's 7, one's a boy, one's a girl. And like, you know, just the world being a gendered place, too. And then our son being much lighter and our daughter having more melanin and being more brown. So like, even though they go to the same school, I feel like they experience things really differently. And so I feel like they have a lot of arguments about things because they're just, their positionality in the world is different, you know? So they'll be like, no, that's not what happened. This happened. And I think the way they move in the world shapes so much of their perspectives too. So.
That's really interesting. So how do you navigate that? Like as their parents, like what's the conversations that you have with them surrounding that and their identities and how they show up in the world?
Yeah, I mean, luckily here, there's a camp that they go to every summer. At least Idris has gone to it every summer called We Are. And it's like an anti-racism camp, which is like so rare to find. Mm-hmm. So we feel very fortunate that he's gone there. And they do a lot of stuff on identity and history, discrimination, racism, how to be an activist, you know, how to be, a co-conspirator and an ally. So and they talk about colorism as well, you know. So we talked to our son about, you know, him being lighter skin and light skin privilege that comes with that. The importance of being an activist, the importance of, you know, looking out for his sister and knowing what discrimination is and racism. So he understands all those things. Sometimes I feel like it's funny that what he concludes from things. But because I remember I was talking to him about like the wage gap and, you know, how women are paid less than men and stuff. And he was like, oh, I'm so glad I'm a boy then. And I was like, well, yes, but we were supposed to be upset about the inequality.
Allyship, remember?
For your mothers, your sisters. Yeah, right. And he was like, yes, yes, but I'm going to make more money, right? And I was like.
And then I'll give you some.
He was like,
he is generous.
I'll lend you some. Don't worry, mama. I'm going to lend you some money. And I was like, I think I'm going to be okay. Yeah, that's interesting that that's like what you took away from it, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're trying to like always have these conversations so that he can know like, yes, and the importance of being an advocate since you're in that position. Mm-hmm.
And it's an ongoing conversation. This is ongoing. It's not a one-time conversation.
Exactly.
It is. It's not like, you know, when Black History Month rolls around, okay, the school's going to teach him about it and then we're good to go, right? This is ongoing.
Yeah. Same thing with Pride Month. But exactly. It's like we tell them that like right now everybody's going to have this parade and have rainbows, but like, you know, this is something that's our lives. You know, we have to be doing this all the time and Black History Month and, you know, things around Haitian culture even too, like, you know, and immigrant communities and like the importance of just like, this is just who we are. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be that every month of the year and have developing a consciousness.
I think that. I did not anticipate how many conversations at a very young age would have to come up about race and racial differences. I think like so much of our relationship at first was like being, you know, a lesbian couple and two moms and like coming out to our families, very queer focused. And then as we had kids, especially our first and second looking so different, we realized that as they were going to like day camps and summer camps that they were experiencing regularly all of the peer groups not thinking they were siblings. And there was a consistent need for them to align with each other and to explain and to express to the other children that they were in fact brother and sister, though they look different. And I think that that was our first real journey into like how you have these conversations that both unite them and then educate them about how melanin is expressed in a variety of ways. And then it's not something to be like shy or nervous or scared about when you talk to other kids. Sometimes they're not coming from like a judgmental standpoint. Yeah, they just literally are looking at two kids that to them look very
different.
And they don't understand how you could be siblings. And so that you can, it was a lot of empowering them how you have those conversations, how you can be
educate others.
And that, I mean, because they don't have to say they have two moms. Like if we're both at drop off, sure. Like that's my mom, that's my mommy, that's my mama.
Mm-hmm. You want them to be proud of it and not feel,
yeah.
I think there's also a camp they went to too, it was a rainbow camp with like kids who were trans and kids who were non-binary and kids, just, you know, so like, and kids who had two moms, two dads, you know, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And that was a really cool camp for them to go to. Like they had an end of the camp week showcase and like the kids like they did plays and one of them did a play where someone was misgendered and they held a protest and it was so cute. And our daughter was in that one and she was like a strawberry farmer who was misgendered and it was just hilarious. I was like, why a strawberry farmer? She was like, I just wanted to be a strawberry farmer.
Yeah.
And I was like, specifically someone who farmed strawberries.
Okay. So random.
That's amazing.
But it was adorable. And so like, and again, going back to intentionality, like the programs we search for,
right,
you know, the communities we try to put them in.
Because they...
Yeah, they do have to do a lot of like, we're siblings and this is how and blah, blah, blah.
They're kind of forced to be little advocates from the start, which is its own little curse, but also is its own little benefit because they're learning as they go and they're going to be fierce.
I hope so. Yeah, I'd like to think so.
Advocating compassionate adults, right?
I often think about just how unique their lives are and how they have to get really comfortable being unique and different at this age. And I'm like somebody that still is not in my footing sometimes with, I'm a people pleaser. I like to like adapt and be a chameleon in spaces. And I've had to learn about my own authenticity and uniqueness and all of that. And I can see how beneficial it is as a skill set to really work on that at a young age. So though it's challenging, I think that it's priming them to be some really fierce advocates in the future and having a strong sense of identity.
You're bringing something up, and I know I was going to wrap up, but now this is like, now I'm like,
we have time. Like,
so yeah, we're not going anywhere.
I'm leaning in now because I think you're bringing up something that I'm trying to put my finger on and allow me to be messy for a second while I try to like say this in draft. But like, as a white cisgendered woman who was in the world just living like for what I thought was a heterosexual, you know, cisgender white woman, I never had to think about the stuff that you just said, Leah, like being authentically me and being okay with the unique parts of myself. I just kind of like breezed on through.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I realized that I was queer, then that wheel had to start turning and that wheel had to start churning about how I had to be okay with showing up in my unique way. And it's a skill that you build. And that's why I think as the queer community, we're kind of well-versed in like living outside of the box now and learning to show up authentically and like own our differences that I think other folks who don't have these differences don't have to do. And I wonder, Janneke, like you being a Black woman in the world, like I feel like you already have a leg up on us in this, right?
Definitely. I was thinking about that when you're saying, as I was thinking about like, and if you're Black and queer, I mean, you know, when you lie at more axes of the intersection of oppression, you have to be that much more innovative, that much yes. more out of the box. So, you know, if you're Black and queer, I think about like all the like historic queer movements and stuff like that have occurred. And a lot of times championed by people of color, you know, Black yes. people, Black queer people. The system is not designed for you to succeed exactly. as queer people, as Black people. So when you combine as a woman, so when you combine all of those together, you do have to learn how to get out of the matrix the system wants you in, you know, how to mm-hmm. think outside of the box, be inventive, innovative, and how to advocate for yourself in a way that's going to get you past those barriers that are set up. So, mm-hmm. and I think like Leah was saying in the beginning, so much of our because our family's reactions were more to the fact that we were with another woman. Mm-hmm. As a Black, my parents could care less that she was white. They were stuck on the fact that she wasn't a man, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So much of our earlier, and then vice versa, but so much of our earlier relationship, like in 09 when we started dating and coming out, was focused on defending that part. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had to do a lot of work of like getting people comfortable with that part mm-hmm. that the racial dynamics of being an interracial couple were not at the forefront
right.
Immediately. And then when we started talking about having kids, that's when it came up more because I was like, well, I cannot have a white donor.
Right.
I was like, this child needs to be like, if you're going first, this donor cannot be white. Like,
yeah. And then you have a full white child and then you're going to have a full Black child. And then like, which there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh yeah. But I was like, I need all of our children to be reflective of us.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, and the first time we were thinking about choosing like a Black donor for Leah that looked like me and then a white donor for me that looked like Leah. And then we were like, but then they won't be biologically related. But they don't have to be. But it was like, okay, what about if they want to meet this donor one day? Then we want them to share that experience, you know?
Yeah. One has a really great experience with a donor and the other one doesn't. Like, so it'd be nice if they had the same shared experience, yeah. whether it's good yeah. or bad. Exactly. Yeah.
So then we decided, okay, let's use the same. And that brought us on our search for like this unique person that was Black and potentially maybe also white and all these things. And we ended up with the donor that we have. But, you know, there was a lot of questions of like, What will our kids look like based on this donor that we're choosing? They're definitely not going to be identical. And then how do we navigate like colorism, you know, and all those things? And they definitely delivered on the, like our daughter looks just like me and our son looks just like Leah.
It's true. Actually, I've seen them.
We're like, where did these donor genes go?
This
like,
donor is dormant, recessive, recessive, recessive.
That's what people joke about our donor too, because my daughter looks exactly like my wife and my son looks exactly like me.
Crazy.
It's like, so funny.
People are like, did you really have help making... It's like, you lesbians know something about cloning. I know. Uh-huh.
But I know it. It was definitely uncomfortable. The first realm of like you said, like you're just kind of going along and you're not thinking about shaking mm-hmm. things up and being different. And then you come out and you're like, oh, here we go. And it's really uncomfortable because you're not quite sure how to own that yet in your own self. And then you're having to protect. You want to protect the person you're with. You want to talk to, you know, your family, but you're not quite sure of it. So that was like a whole mountain. And then we looked mm-hmm. around and I was like, wait a second. I don't, in all of my family, there are no people of color and nobody's married somebody of color. So here we are.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
it was
so there's like this oddity of like our relationship being two times odd. And then Janneke's family is very Haitian and there's
very
no
Haitian.
White people that have married into the family either. So then I'm like looking around, I'm like, not only are we gay, like I'm the only white person at this function and she's the only Black person yeah. at this function.
So on both sides, it was very, like when we say we were never supposed to meet.
Like, there's wow. no like, there's no like sneaking there's into the back nothing. Of a function in our families. Like we no. are going to stand out. Regardless.
You're gonna stand out like a person,
period. Like my sister's getting married in May and Leah will be the only white person there probably.
Yes, I will.
Maybe, maybe one or two, but yes, like everything she comes to now, she is the only white person. My family has really, you know, surprised me, even my extended family, with like how much they've been, how welcoming they have been. And Liz learned some Creole and she knows how to cook some Haitian dishes. So
I can like cook better than I can talk.
They think it's adorable. So yeah.
And yeah. See, yeah. Mom is like always in the kitchen teaching me how to cook. Yeah. So.
Oh, that's really so sweet. She's happy I love
to
that. Have
a daughter who finally wants to
learn. Yeah. She's like, I tried with Yanaga.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love it. That's amazing. I'm coming over to eat at y'all's
house. Yeah. It's good food. Yanaga's mom definitely knows how to cook.
Leah can cook more Haitian dishes than I can. Yeah. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. I need to learn.
And there's this black rice, dui zhong zhong, which you have to like get these black mushrooms to like boil down into your rice. And it's so good.
Leah's very proud of her ability to do dui zhong.
Yanaga's mom Yanaga's mom in Brooklyn's got to send me the black mushrooms. I don't know where to get them in North Carolina. So she'll send me the mushrooms for the dishes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. And I love that. And
that's saying a lot because like.
Saying a lot.
Yeah. It was a full 180. It was not good when we first came out, but now it's crazy. Crazy when I say crazy because like I would have never thought how much, you know, especially my mom has just completely come around. So it's really it's really beautiful.
We had to break through a lot of like religious things and then also just fear. Like the fear of community and society not being accepting. And so it took a little while. Yeah. But the nice thing about Yanaga's mom in particular is she's just like a really sweet, wonderful person. And so like when we had kids, she's just like, this is a child. I'm going to love the child. And then as she watches us nurture and care for our children, I think like she just like ice melting over time, right? Yeah. Like, and you just realize that like humans are humans and it's not really the fear cycle can keep you stuck. But like, if you can let go of the fear cycle, then you're
and we also recognize how fortunate we are because we know that we know personally people where that's not the case, no matter how much, you know, their parents think that they're doing that out of love or whatever it might be. So we know how fortunate we are that the people who were resistant at first did come around eventually because that's not always the situation.
It's not the case for everyone. But in a lot of instances and many people I've talked to, it's the kids that actually, like you said, Leah melted the ice with the grandparents.
Definitely.
Yeah. So that's so sweet. And your mom got the white daughter she never thought she wanted.
For real. It's so true. It's so funny. It's so funny. Yeah.
But I just want to finish on this. Like what I say all the time is like, you know, you're going about your business as gay interracial couple before you have kids, right? And you don't necessarily always have to talk about the things, and you don't have to always be out and loud and proud when you don't have children. But once those children come out, that's when you realize, oh shit, I have to model pride because I don't ever want them to feel any shame about any of the ways they show up in the world. So when I'm on the street and the coffee cart guy that I stopped to get my kids a donut at says, oh my God, she looks just because we all look the same because we're all like white and blonde. She looks, you know, this coffee cart guy said to us, me and my kids one day, oh, she is the spitting image of you, which is hilarious because she's not. And then looked down at my son and was like, oh, he must be all dad, huh? Yeah. He looks just like dad. Yeah. I can't, where I would have normally just been like, dad. I cannot do that. No. He doesn't have a dad.
Yes.
He has two moms.
Yeah.
Because you got to model them. It helps them to build the skills.
Exactly.
In how to respond to those kinds of situations. Like, not said in any sort of malice.
No. Nope. Yeah, no. Just like... Mm-hmm. Casually demonstrating who we are. And that's like, you had to be intentional in that moment. Cause like, I think about times when that happens, sometimes I'm tired, you know, I just want to be like, Cause I just don't feel like getting into it. You know, I don't always want to, but if my kids are there, I will have to be like, oh no, no, she has two moms or he has two moms or whatever it is, because they need to see that. Cause they'll clock that. Even if you're thinking it's not a big deal, they will clock it as like, okay, so that's what I should do and say. Right. Yeah. You know,
I can hide.
Yeah. And that's something to acknowledge too, as like femme presenting lesbians, you know, that we know that we have a choice we can make. We can choose to hide, or sometimes we're hidden in ways that we might not realize we are. But I think I personally think it's really important to not, for me, in the sense of safety that I feel right now, I do my best to not do that.
Right.
Because I think it's important for everybody to know this is what queer looks like too.
Yeah.
Because people have these impressions. Like, so I'm a professor and every day on the first day of class, I show a picture of our family, you know, and I'm like, and this is my wife. These are our children we made together.
queer looks like, as well as a biker dyke.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. Like, all of that is queer. Yeah.
We are all, you know, we come in all
different
all
ways.
Well, yeah. And the amount of sizes.
Yeah, the amount of kids that are students, kids, everything's a kid to me now, but the students like that feel comfortable coming out to Yannica. Yeah. I'm always like really enamored by like how students open up to her simply just because she is her. Like not because she's like educating up there, educating about certain things, just because they feel comfortable and once safe to say like I'm gay too.
I think about if I never said that, they probably wouldn't assume that, and then they wouldn't feel comfortable sharing. And so it's so important.
Yeah. Also, to add on to what you said about like, you know, that we can pass and we can show up in the world and people can just assume that we're straight. I feel the need to actually be more out because there are people who cannot hide.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So me just being authentic and like out in some little tiny way helps those folks, you know, get recognized in the world or normalized a little bit more. Oh my God. So good. This has been so fun. If I'm ever in North Carolina, I'm coming over for dinner.
Please do. Please do.
Stop through.
Do you have an invite?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. I love it. I love you too. Keep on doing all the wonderful things you're doing. And please keep in touch because now you are part of the family.
Yes.
And,
thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
This was awesome. Yeah. This was so great.
Queer Family Podcast.
A special thank you once again to California Cryobank for being a sponsor of this episode. Use code QueerFam25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. And tune in next week for another amazing episode of Queer Family Goodness.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in. And I'll see you next time. Mwah.